if the company has a positive and supportive and inclusive diversity climate, and then employee loyalty is likely to be improved.
Hi everyone, welcome to The Vandal Theory, a podcast about science and research at the University of Idaho. My name is Lee Cooper, and I'm going to be your host for today. I'm an editor and science writer here at University of Idaho, and I am also joined by my wonderful co-host. Hi, Danae.
Hi, Lee. I'm Danae Lenz. I am the external communications coordinator at U of I.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty well. I'm excited to dive into today's topic.
So today, we're going to talk about diversity in the workplace. And a question to kick us off. Fast as you can, what are as many types of diversity as you can think of that could influence a team's working dynamic? Go for it.
Okay. Well, I think there's the ones everyone would think of: age, ethnicity, gender, socioeconomic status. But then I think there's ones that people probably don't think about as often. So neurodivergence, degree level, marital, parental status, disability maybe, definitely. And then political party probably, religion, and then just general job experience. Those are probably the ones that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yep, I think all those come into play. I mean, they're all going to really influence how a team, you know, team cohesion, how they're going to work together, the vibe of the office. I mean, I've seen all these types of diversity come into play where I've worked.
Yes, absolutely. I really do think that there are all sorts of diversity that people just don't think about on a daily basis, even though it's probably affecting their relationships, personal and professional.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how, you know, people's, who they are and their backgrounds, the things that equate to diversity, really do affect how you integrate into the team, how you work with the team. I've seen everything from, you know, military backgrounds to how much you've moved around, how many different places have you lived. All of that is going to shape who you are and your experiences and what you bring to the table when you walk in the office door.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Yeah, we do have a professor who's studied this type of thing a lot. Yung Chung, who is a professor of management and human resources, she's going to talk us through a number of studies about diversity in the workplace, including how diversity on a company board affects the company's success, and some nuances behind different types of diversity in the workplace. All right, ready to go?
I'm so ready.
Yoon, hello. Thank you so much for coming on The Vandal Theory today.
Oh, you're welcome. Hello, good to see you.
So for our audience, can you introduce yourself?
Oh, yes, of course. My name is Yoon Jung. I'm a professor of management and human resources in the University of Idaho. And my research area includes workplace diversity, social networks, and then strategic human resource management.
And we are tackling, for the most part, that first one, diversity and management. Before we jump into some of your most recent work, I want to help define some terms for our audience. Everybody, you know, hears the words CEO and boards thrown around in terms of, you know, the corporate world. But what is the kind of usual cookie cutter relationship of a CEO and its board?
Yes, so that is a good question. Before we start conversation about my research, the CEO is the top leader of the company. And then the board members are actually the elected members who help the CEO and other executives to develop some strategic directions for the company. And also they represent the shareholders. So they serve as some sort of corporate watchdog on behalf of shareholders. So if, for example, the CEO doesn't perform really well, typically that company performance is not good. And if that happens, that board member steps in and then give advice to CEO, or they might let the CEO go. So board members, very important decisions for the CEO. However, sometimes board members are not entirely independent. So what happens is that CEO has a very strong power and resources. And then being a board member is very prestigious, especially in large corporate. Therefore, sometimes some board members do not make an objective and fair decision. So when the CEO doesn't not perform really well, and then sometimes they just to protect the CEO and then do not make the best decision for the company and also the shareholders.
So protecting the CEO over the people they're supposed to be protecting, the business itself and the stakeholders.
Yes, absolutely.
Ooh, that's rough. All right, so this is the relationship that you've been studying, the relationship between the board and the CEO. Can you give us a quick overview of what your study was, what questions you were looking at, and then kind of what companies you were looking at and how you kind of went about it?
Yes, the recent research that we published it in Strategic Management Journal, we investigated that when the board makes the CEO dismissal decision, so when they make the decision about whether or not they have to let CEO go or not, and then what factors influence the dismissal decision. So we are interested in and how the power of the CEO group formed based upon the individual backgrounds influence CEO dismissal decisions. So meaning that we define the CEO subgroup as that based upon or like a few different individual characteristics, and then to what extent these individual characteristics are similar to the CEO, and then based upon that, we identify the board members CEO subgroup within the board, and then if these board members are powerful, and then the CEO dismissal is actually less likely to happen.
So we're looking at whether, when the company's not doing good, whether to let the CEO go, and then sort of the power dynamic. Are there subgroups within the board who are standing behind the CEO or not? And then you're looking at these backgrounds, right?
Yes, exactly. So if some board members have the same background, meaning that, I mean, they have the same demographic characteristics, for example, like age and then the gender, etc., as well as if they have some the shared experience, for example, that some board members have the CEO experience before. Or these board members were selected after the CEO was appointed. And then typically when they select the board members, CEO can influence that decision. So if they have the shared experiences, and then we identify those people would support the CEO.
Okay, so and maybe this is kind of also a larger question. When we talk about, as you said, you study diversity and management, you're saying it's not necessarily the age, gender, race, but that shared experience that really drives whether they stand behind the CEO.
Yes, sometimes people define diversity very no narrowly, and then they believe that like only gender, ethnicity, age are about all about diversity. But actually, most diversity research identifies there are many different types of diversity. So one is actually the shared experience, or it could be different. I mean, say the perspectives and views, or it could be personalities, or it could be knowledge and information. But in our study, we identify the shared experience with the CEO.
Okay, so we're talking about a subgroup of people who have the same background, maybe went to the same schools, or as you said, were a CEO in the past themselves, whatever the case may be. If they're really quiet, does this subgroup have to have something more to make their voices heard?
Yes, so that's why we focused on power. So being on the CEO subgroup, meaning that the board members have the same background with the CEO, is not sufficient to make a strong influence on board decision. So if the CEO subgroup is powerful And then they can influence the board decision significantly.
And when we say they're powerful, what does that mean in this case?
In our study, we looked at two different things. One is the size of the board. So board makes an important decision based upon like their votes. So if the size is large, and they're more likely to influence board decision. And also the other one is their individual power. So if these board members have large number of shares, if they are stockholders, or if they have a lot of directorships outside the company, that means they have strong social networks and things like that, and then they are more likely to be powerful.
Okay. And I realize we kind of skipped over it. What companies did you look at?
So we looked at S&P 500 companies. So our sample consists of large corporates.
Okay. Yeah, some of the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we've got these powerful subgroups with the same background that can have greater than average pull as to whether the CEO keeps their job or not. In these, you know, S&P 500 big companies, what should companies take away from this study? What should they learn from this?
Oh, I actually did not find one more interesting findings yet.
Oh, go ahead.
So one thing that we examined is that to what extent CEO subgroup power influence your dismissal decision. So finding was that if the CEO subgroup power is higher, and then they're less likely to fire the CEO. And also we examined that when company performance declines, and then how this power influences CEO dismissal decision. So ideally, when the company performance declines, then the board member should be more likely to make a decision to let the CEO go. But what happens is that in our study, when performance declines, then the CEO subgroup is more likely to protect the CEO. So when the company performance is getting worse, then the powerful CEO subgroup is more likely to keep the CEO, because they see that when the performance declines, and then that's a threat to their power within the company. So they are more likely to protect the CEO if they are powerful. So that was an interesting finding from our study.
Interesting. Company's under threat. We're going to keep the guy who likes us already, even though company's not doing great. All right. So then what should companies take away from this kind of, you know, bigger picture?
Yes. So the board member's decision is very, very important. And then when company performance is not good, and then it does negatively influence a shareholder's wealth. At the same time, it may negatively influence employees' life and well-being, as well as suppliers and many different stakeholders. Because if company is not doing well, and then probably they have to lay off employees, or, you know, a lot of these things could happen. So it is very important that to help the board be more neutral and then make a fair decision for the company. So to do so, it is important to make the board more diverse. And also not trying to hire board members who have lots of overlapping backgrounds with a CEO, so that board members can make a fair and more objective decisions for the company.
Well, I would think the board members, I mean, these aren't random people who have never been in business. They're business savvy, hopefully. And obviously, each one of us, I mean, whether we're a CEO or not, you know, has our own bundle of knowledge, that the board really can be a positive influence on, you know, bringing strategy to the table.
Yes, absolutely. If they do really well, and then, of course, that company has very positive influence by them, for sure. However, we are all human, and then board members can depend upon the CEO's individual resources and then power. Therefore, board members do not always make a fair decision for the company.
So does this idea of having powerful subgroups that similar backgrounds, is there any way that that kind of trickles down? Do we see any sort of those types of trends in rank and file employees at all?
Oh, yes, of course. So we are all humans, and then we, by nature, interact with other people who have the same backgrounds. And then we feel more comfortable working with people who have the same background, for sure. So it is actually very natural to make subgroups within, you know, any organization and then any teams. And then we actually have another study that examined that how subgroups, rank and file, like employees subgroups, influence their individual loyalty to the company.
And when we say loyalty, like sticking around for years, is that what how we're defining that?
Oh, no. In our study, loyalty means that to what extent employees are more dedicated to their work for the company.
Oh, okay. Okay, so give me the basics on this study. What were you looking at? Who were you looking at? I think you've told me we can't say the exact company name, but generally what did this group of people look like?
Yes. So typically, diversity research argues that there are two major groups of diversity. One is demographic diversity, meaning that like age and gender and ethnicity, etc. And the other one is information and knowledge diversity. So like functional background knowledge or like tenure, things like that. And then theoretically, demographic diversity has negative consequences, while the informational diversity has positive outcomes.
So, okay, demographic diversity, you really increase that, can have negative consequences, while knowledge diversity has positive.
Yes, what I'm saying is that theoretically. Because demographic diversity is based upon like age and gender, things like that. So people tend to have the conflict between different demographic backgrounds. So theoretically, that demographic diversity has negative consequences, and then informational diversity has positive outcomes theoretically. The reason is that if people have different skill sets within team, and then that's going to be like beneficial to promote the innovation and creativity and then different ideas. So because they have different skill sets and knowledge. So have positive outcomes, but the important thing is that so far we did not, like in the field and the diversity, and we did not find any consistent results.
Okay, so despite the fact that theoretically these things are relatively cut and dry, in the field it's sometimes?
Yes, exactly. So sometimes diversity, I mean, in demographic diversity has a negative impact, and then sometimes positive, and then sometimes no. I mean, informational diversity is the same thing. So in our study, we found only like a partial support, and then like a gender-based subgroups reduced the loyalty, but the rest of them were non-significant. We did not find anything.
Okay. Diversity has, as per usual, and what we generally learn whenever we look deeply into a subject, that there's more nuance than originally believed. What should companies and managers keep in mind when approaching diversity in the workforce? Because the idea of hiring diversity solves all problems, that sounds like that's not true. On the flip side, you don't want to completely not hire for diversity and have, you know, a very single look and feel to the company. So what should they keep in mind? What are some of the nuances that you're taking away from this work?
So that is more relevant to the another finding from our study. So we identified that the diversity climate is very important. So regardless of their like subgroups based upon gender or ethnicity or that knowledge, and then if the company has a positive and supportive and inclusive diversity climate, and then employee loyalty is likely to be improved. Also, we've identified that this positive and inclusive diversity climate actually reduced the negative influence of demographic diversity. And also, it's going to increase positive influence knowledge diversity. So, what we found is that diversity climate is more important than any of these subgrouping and then diversity variables.
Do you have any examples of what having a good diversity climate looks like?
So, positive diversity climate may include, for example, that the company makes a fair decision on performance evaluation, for example. And then they treat employees fairly on their education or training opportunities. So employees see or perceive that the company's practices are in general fairly made, and then that is positive diversity climate.
Excellent. All right, well, we're getting on towards the end here. Is there anything that you especially want people to take away from this?
We have to face reality. So, meaning that people will create subgroups based upon their backgrounds anyway. Meaning that people like to hang out with other people who have the same background, and then they might have conflicts with other people who have different backgrounds. So, it is actually very natural to have people who have different dissimilar backgrounds and then, dissimilar perspectives and knowledge, etc. But in the organizational context, that is okay. Because some conflict would actually influence decision-making quality and also improve innovation. If, for example, if everyone knows the same thing and they have the same background, of course, probably that they might be able to be really close friends. However, being a close friends doesn't necessarily improve innovation and also creativity, and then also improve decision making because they know the same thing and they have the same perspective. So, what organizations typically seek is that having people go beyond their comfort zone and then having them have a little bit of different perspective and conflicts, but that's okay because that they would be able to come up with better ideas and also better decision making. So, but at the same time, these diverse teams may have strong conflict. So, to reduce this conflict, what organization can do is to create inclusive and positive diversity climate, so that people who have different backgrounds can work together really well for the company.
Excellent. All right. Well, Yoon, thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a pleasure to meet with you.
Right, so what did you take away from that?
I thought it was a super interesting conversation overall, but the number one thing that stood out to me was that demographic diversity is not necessarily helpful in and of itself. So I think the general thought out there is that the more diverse you can make your team, the better off you will be. But it turns out that's not actually the case. It can be, but there has to be a certain type of company culture that makes all of those different pieces work well together.
Yeah, just shoving all the Barbies together and hoping they get along well, that's not realistic. You have to support them.
Yes, absolutely. But on the opposite side of demographic diversity, there's knowledge diversity. And that, in and of itself, is always universally helpful. So you have people who have all different types of backgrounds, doing different things, coming in together to work as a team. And they all know different things, And I would imagine that people who are farther along in their careers and people who are just starting off also have different types of knowledge. So obviously someone who is far along in their career, they have a lot of just built-in knowledge, but someone who's just starting off, they just came out of college, they probably have a lot of new ideas, and I imagine that that would be helpful as well.
Yeah, I can see how differences in demographic diversity really can cause some conflict and strife without there being a nice setup around it. I mean, you're bringing in new ideas, a new way of seeing the world, which can be uncomfortable. And when you're uncomfortable, it's quite easy to, you know, get your hackles up. So I can see where without the support, without everybody agreeing to push their boundaries a little bit, that there could be some difficulties working together without support.
Yes, absolutely. Because people just come in from different places in life. You know, we all have our own backgrounds, and it can lead to some really good things, but also some conflict.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to The Vandal Theory. You can visit our website, uidaho.edu/vandaltheory, to learn more about all the research we do at U of I. You can also email us at vandaltheory@uidaho.edu. We're on almost all the podcasting platforms out there, so feel free to rate and review us, and absolutely go and subscribe. My name is Lee Cooper.
And I'm Danae Lenz.
And thanks for joining us.